This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest today is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment, a social purpose corporation dedicated to socially responsible investing and shareholder advocacy. Bruce Herbert is here to tell us about shareholder advocacy and progress made in creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2016 proxy season. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you. It's great to be here again, Diane.
Remind us, what is socially responsible investing and what is the goal?
Fundamentally, I would say it's an opportunity for individuals and organizations to merge their values with their dollars. We often describe social investment as a three-legged stool. And the first leg is screening or avoiding companies that are engaged in activities that the investor might not feel comfortable with. The second leg is microcredit lending or community investment, impact investing. That's what Muhammad Yunus won a Nobel Peace Prize for in 2006. The third leg that we're talking about in a more focused way today is shareholder engagement or shareholder advocacy, which is using your rights as shareholders to really go out and talk to companies about addressing the issues that arise out of their operations. So I've described this in the past and just now as a stool with three legs. I now also talk about that stool is sitting on or standing on a floor that's comprised of policy work. And that's the policy sort of work to change the rules of the road, the laws of the land, that really enable all of this to go forward in a more sustainable way.
What are the advantages of shareholder engagement in contributing to socially responsible investing?
Really, the key advantage is outcome. If you think about it, companies would like nothing more than if every person or entity that disagreed with their practices, if they sold their shares and never darkened the doorway again. So we make a practice of using our rights as shareholders to continually engage with companies about addressing those issues and improving them. So it really is sort of transformational on the ground. Another aspect is that it has the ability to have an enduring or ongoing kind of conversation. We'll talk perhaps more about divestment at some point along the way, but with ownership, you can continue the dialogue and come back year after year and talk about these things. It's a wonderful catalyst for change. You know, shareholders have used these tools to talk to companies about improving climate risk in their management and disclosure, sustainable forestry practices, poor labor conditions, and human rights all over the globe, not discriminating against employees based on their sexual orientation, a whole array of health and safety and environmental organizations, executive compensation, the runaway pay for CEOs in corporate America, racial and gender diversity on boards, and things like offering comprehensive reports on sustainability issues. There's a tremendous array of things. Basically, companies are made up of people, and they touch every aspect of our lives, either as we work for them, as we buy their products, as they just operate in our communities. And so we address all of those kinds of issues.
How widespread is shareholder advocacy, and who is involved?
Well, it's tremendously widespread. In fact, every 2 years, there is a trends report, is what it's called, put forward by the Social Investment Forum. And we're expecting a release of a new one in just a few months. But the most recent one showed an increase of 76% in assets that were managed or invested with some form of a social criteria involved. So $6.6 trillion. And that represents about one in every $6 that is actually invested. So just to draw a point, that's not your money in a checking account. It's money that's in your mutual funds, your 401ks, the stocks and bonds and things like that, basically invested money. And the people who are involved, basically anyone who owns a share of stock, public pension funds, your state and municipal funds, individuals, of course, faith-based entities, sovereign wealth funds of other nations, labor unions, foundations and endowments, asset managers, mutual funds, it runs the gamut.
What determines whether a shareholder proposal is placed on the ballot at an annual meeting?
The rules around all of this are promulgated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. The two most basic rules, there are many as you might imagine, but the two most basic ones are that a shareholder has to own $2,000 worth of stock, and that's dollars, not shares, and they have to have held it for a year. In addition, the proposal topic has to be germane to shareholders at large. And can't be, a more technical one is it can't be dealing with what is called quote-unquote ordinary business. So companies will challenge and try to knock out a proposal if they think that a shareholder is being too meddlesome in the day-to-day operation of the companies. So it's a mediated process. Shareholders file proposals. Companies either accept them or sometimes challenge and try to reject them. And then the process for that unfolding is all mediated by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
How active has this year's proxy season been in terms of shareholder proposals being submitted?
Well, quite a number. The latest figures, and of course, companies don't all have their annual meetings at the same time, so companies are still having annual meetings, but the latest figures that we have are there are 916 shareholder proposals filed, which actually is down slightly from last year. And one of the interesting things about this is that even though the numbers are down, the interaction between companies and shareholders has kind of increased in a certain way and decreased in another way. But it's been an interesting year, that's for sure.
Would you give some highlights of the 2016 proxy season?
Well, there's lots to choose from. There have been a number of majority votes. Newground set a precedent this year with a company called Baker Hughes Incorporated. It's an oil and gas services company. And it was interestingly not related to the topic itself. It was related to the process of bringing shareholder proposals forward. And basically, in short, companies, one of the things that they challenge on is the right of a shareholder to bring a proposal. And this is in particular a company like Newground representing one of its clients, one of its customers. And so for years, companies have said to us and to others, oh, you have to prove that you're authorized. And then you would submit a letter from the shareholder saying you're authorized. But then they would pick the letter apart and say, well, it doesn't say this year particularly. It doesn't mention this company specifically. It doesn't say this one topic. So they would try to exclude it and succeeded in that. Well, I looked at this, and over the last several years, we actually went through a process in putting the stepping stones in place to where this year we were able to submit something as a test case. We labeled it as such to the Securities and Exchange Commission. And long story short, companies now, when someone like a Newground files a shareholder proposal, because of there's a three different documents that are a part of that, we no longer have to submit a separate letter of authorization because the proof of our authority and the anticipation of a shareholder for us to do that is already evident in the other documents. It's kind of technical in a way, and it might seem a little minor, but what it actually does is opens the door for a much larger number of people, brokers and advisors and people who work with their customers across the spectrum, to get involved without being daunted by this quasi-legal proceeding that the SEC has.
Are there additional highlights in the 2016 proxy season?
Oh, well, there were a number of majority voting in uncontested director elections. And those got some majority votes. We had amendments to bylaws related to articles of incorporation and board declassification. Companies would have a multitude of different, what they called classes. And so all of your directors were not coming up for election at the same time. So that created an entrenched situation where if something went wrong, the directors couldn't be held accountable because they might not be up for a vote for three more years, things like that. Certainly, one of the highlights is the real expansion of proxy access. Now, proxy access is talking about access of shareholders to nominate directors to the board. And 2 years ago, we really started to see an increase in these kinds of proposals, and that has really gone forward, and a number of them received a majority outcome. And so companies are starting to institute processes where there can be environmental representatives, community representatives, worker representatives on the board, which we think is really valuable because the board is not an old boys club. It's a representation of the best interests of the company. And if the company serves a community that involves a variety of stakeholders, including its workers, including its customers, the board should be a representation of that diversity so that they have the best ideas about how to serve and expand. So proxy access is really one of the biggest ones.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2016 proxy season. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. How has shareholder advocacy addressed climate change issues during the 2016 proxy season?
Well, it's been very exciting. It's one of the largest stories, I think, of the year is the increase in shareholder proposals in this arena. So one of the main organizations that file proposals is ICCR, the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. And ICCR is the group that created the South African divestiture movement. And ICCR members filed 115 resolutions just related to climate and environmental things and were engaged in a number of dialogues in relation to this. And they focused on things like methane and carbon asset risk and the need for a two-degree scenario planning, kind of falling in line with some of the 350.org requests, renewable energy targets, energy efficiency, utilities, asking them to change their power mix, you know, from reliance on fossil fuels to renewable sources like wind and solar. And of course, lobbying and political spending and how companies use their influence to affect laws and avoid regulation. So there are a variety of different things. Methane is one of the areas in fracking that has been immensely controversial. You know, serious questions, as you know, have been raised whether it leaks too much methane into the atmosphere, how much that contributes to global warming, and whether it contaminates water and otherwise harms the local communities where these operations take place. And since 2009, shareholders have filed about 50 shareholder proposals at companies involving fracking, asking them to do a better job about disclosing how well they're managing these risks and protecting not only workers, but the communities in which they operate. And shareholders have also published guidelines for this kind of disclosure. And a few years ago, this went to 24 companies, a questionnaire about these guidelines. Every single company flunked. But this year, they did a lot better. About 30% of the companies did provide some really meaningful information that helps then the regulation. It helps also activists and communities to better address and protect themselves. There is one standout. BHP Billiton responded to nearly every one of the shareholder questions, and so they really provide something of a model that companies should follow. And so methane, as you know, is a very powerful gas. And this year in May, the EPA announced the nation's very first rule on regulating methane from the oil and gas industry. A lot of shareholder actions and investor letters went in to encourage EPA to take that track. And in particular, there was a meeting at the White House that was subsequent to the final rule being disclosed, that where investors learned that the investor statement that we all signed about this enabled the administration actually to strengthen the final rule in a number of important ways, including setting fixed schedule for leak monitoring and not exempting smaller wells. So basically made it much more comprehensive and much more thoroughgoing. So those are the kinds of things that have been going on in relation to the oil and gas and in relation to climate change and how shareholders have had a direct input. And it goes back to that policy floor that the three-legged stool sits on. So the EPA rules are a representation of that kind of work that we're always constantly focused on.
What were some of the highlights in regard to shareholder advocacy from this year's Exxon annual meeting?
Well, the Exxon annual meeting is always a fun meeting. I would say that the strong investor presence from really across the entire spectrum, faith-based, pension funds, unions, international, students from Yale, and so forth, they're all raising the climate change in their remarks. There was a proposal actually on the ballot for a vote that the company tried to challenge and knock off, but was not successful in doing so, that talked about the moral imperative of the company operating in a larger system than just serving shareholder, you know, dividends and earnings per share. And it received 18.5% of the vote, which we didn't talk about it this year yet, but putting that into context, because so many shares are directly or indirectly controlled by management, the SEC, who sets up the rules on this, have established a threshold where if a proposal is submitted and gets a 3% vote in the first year, 6% in the second, and 10 or higher in all the subsequent years, that is an indication of the informed and independent shareholders, a large enough indication of independent shareholder vote that it can be automatically resubmitted in some coming years. So 18.5% for a first-time proposal is actually, in the context of these things, quite striking. So we were very excited about that one. There also was a proxy access resolution at ExxonMobil. It was filed in part because of climate concerns, and and it received a 6% of the vote. So it received a majority. That's a first for a resolution at Exxon to receive a vote of that high. So it was a very interesting year at Exxon, just as it has been in years prior.
Would you comment on shareholder engagement compared to divestment as an approach to influencing the behavior of fossil fuel companies?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misunderstanding about divestment and the effect and intent of divestment. Basically, they can work hand in hand. If you look at the most classic example of the South African divestiture movement, divestiture, particularly of larger institutions, helped to bring the light and bring attention and necessary public attention to these issues, in that case, apartheid regime in South Africa. And then what that led was to then sanctions being taken, both at the federal level as well as at municipal levels, and companies being told, and the sanctions were basically companies being told, if you're doing business in South Africa, we're not going to do business with you. So the same entities, the universities and such that divested, then would have selective purchasing campaigns. And that's what directly affected the wallets of the South African regime and really forced them to the table. And if you talk to the freedom fighters who still are living, they will tell you, as they have me, that this is really what broke the back. Because if they had the money, they would have kept buying the arms, they would have kept reinforcing their authoritarian regime and would have kept doing just what they've been doing. So time and again, effective economics is critical, but it's not just making a splash by selling your shares. You do want to do it publicly, but then you want to use that as the leverage in the launching pad for doing something more. So in regard to divestment of fossil fuel companies, two things. One is that through portfolio optimization and other ways of managing diversification and risk, a person or an entity can divest of the Carbon Underground 200 without having a measurable effect on their portfolio. But the other thing to keep in mind is that when you divest, that's a one-time deal. You no longer have a voice at that company, and you can't divest again because you've already done it. So we think that most of these problems are longer-term in nature and require the ongoing influence of people of conscience and people of intelligence to keep these issues moving in the right direction over the long haul. So that's what I would say. But the two working together is most powerful. It's not an all one or all the other.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. Our topic is shareholder advocacy and progress made toward creating positive change in publicly traded corporations during the 2016 proxy season. Over time, what has been the response of the fossil fuel companies to shareholder engagement, in your view?
Well, as you can imagine, there's an elemental conflict. In essence, if you have a company that identifies itself as simply an oil or a gas company, and you're asking them to no longer extract or sell those products, you're in essence asking them to go out of business. So they're not going to lightly, you know, accept that as a shared outcome. So historically, companies have been very resistant to any shareholder proposal and so forth and fought it tooth and nail at the SEC, trying to exclude it from even being on the docket and under discussion. But what has been happening more recently, and ExxonMobil is a case of this, last year ExxonMobil agreed to produce a sustainability report directly related to their greenhouse gas emissions, reporting on that and establishing whether or not there was risk to them involved in their production vis-a-vis the changing law and changing landscape. So companies are moving and starting, and what that entails is sort of a broadening of their definition. You know, if you think of yourself as an energy company, not just an oil and gas company, then you can start to look at some of these other, like British Petroleum used to call themselves BP Beyond Petroleum. Now, there's still the vast majority of their revenues came from fossil fuels, but it's this kind of thinking of moving and transitioning away from one toward another that's positive. And to a certain extent, companies won't have an option if proxy access comes in, new people come to inform the board, and so forth. But the most important thing, I think, really, is that over the years, the types of reports and disclosure and transparency that shareholders have brought companies to the table on are really what are now allowing organizations like 350 and Bill McKibben to do their work. Because if they didn't have the information on which to critique these companies, there would be no movement. And that information came from shareholder initiatives over the last several decades around transparency and disclosure in these arenas. And the other thing that shareholders have done is companies have heretofore funneled lots of money into false science and organizations to promulgate and put forward all of this false science. And we have one by one been able to strip away the companies from supporting this, either generically in a broad sweep with the political disclosure and lobbying proposals, and in a micro way by actually going to them to say, get out of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, getting out of what was called the Global Climate Change Coalition, which sounds like a benign, you know, Sierra Club type of a thing, but it really was an industry front group to create and promulgate false science. And so that organization no longer exists because shareholders have said, you know, what you're doing in supporting this organization and this track is counter to shareholder best interest and long-term value. And so we've defunded those organizations. So being involved is really critical. And so that's really the key there, I think.
In what ways has corporate governance been addressed in this year's proxy season?
Well, we touched on proxy access. That's really quite the largest one. A large number of proposals were filed on vote counting, and we've touched on that in the past years. How companies count votes is not very democratic oftentimes. They can legally use different formulas that incorporate votes that aren't cast one way or another, but they can count them all, for instance, as being against shareholder proposals unilaterally, regardless of what voter intent was. We find that to be very undemocratic, and it actually disenfranchises voters in ways that they don't expect or anticipate. Last year, we talked about a very arcane little rule in the SEC regulations called 14A8I Section I-9, and a proposal was put forward by companies to interpret that in a radical way, which would have allowed companies to undo any shareholder-sponsored proposal and strike it from the ballot without even going through a formal challenge process. So a large consortium of people got together. Actually, Newground led the bringing people together, and attorneys wrote our response, and we got something like $2 or $3 trillion of assets behind it. And long story short, the SEC has stuck with their original interpretation of that rule and totally rejected this attempt to fundamentally change how these rules are interpreted. So those are a couple of the main ones in the governance arena. And we've touched on some of the others about staggering boards and a variety of things like that. Because everyone is interested in governance, the largest number of shareholder proposals at large are on governance topics. And sometimes they are very kind of routine, traditional, quote unquote traditional. Sometimes they're more sustainable governance, like our vote counting. But that's what I would say about that.
How have corporate lobbying and political contributions been addressed by shareholder engagement during the 2016 proxy season?
More than 300 of America's leading corporations now have adopted political disclosure. And in 2016, two companies actually had majority votes, winning votes. One was NiSource at 50.3%, and Fluor had a near supermajority of 61.8%, just about 62%. And so we still have continued strong, high average votes for the model resolutions, and it was 34% this year was the average vote, which is quite high given that demographic of voting that I talked about before, the 3%, 6%, and 10%. 12 new companies reached disclosure agreements this year, and overall the number, as I mentioned, stands in the several hundreds. And beyond that, more than 300 companies have adopted some form of political disclosure. There's an index now called the CPA-Zicklin Index that measures and ranks those companies. And we've had a number of successes here in the Northwest with companies adopting that. So what these numbers show is that political disclosure is accepted by companies as the norm. And this is very important as we go into our upcoming political season, election season, a record high spending campaign. Really, I don't think there are any disappointments in that regard that I can think of or would cite.
What do you consider the greatest successes of the 2016 proxy season?
Well, certainly the growth in the number of climate proposals. It's up 143% from just a few years ago, and the average vote has risen to 25%. So that's a very important thing. Occidental Petroleum, I'll mention, Not quite a majority vote. It was 49% on climate change, but that was the highest ever on a climate change proposal. A group called PPG Industries, they announced a commitment to totally phase out lead in their products, not just in paint, but from all of their non-consumer coatings formulations. So that's really cool. Of course, it always depends on how you measure success. These votes are nice, but we actually measure success more in the outcomes where companies take actions. And that we have already touched on in terms of the disclosure, the transparency, the accountability that takes place in the new companies setting greenhouse gas goals and all of the tremendous shift in palm oil. You know, palm oil is in just about every edible product, just it seems like. And the way that that was being harvested was just cutting down rainforest and really destroying huge areas. And that is our greenhouse gas sink. And of course, the burning creates the carbon, but also the forests, you know, clean the air. And so major shifts have happened in palm oil as a result of shareholder action and working in union with advocacy groups. So those are some of the greatest successes, I would say.
What do you consider the greatest disappointments of the 2016 proxy season?
Well, we were pretty lucky this year. I mean, the SEC did shoot down one proposal on income inequality. That was one of the surprises, I would say. But basically, we always hope the companies will move a lot faster and go a lot further than they do. That's why it's important for us to be involved year after year after year. And it's still worth calling out that fewer than 20% of board seats in corporate America today are held by women. You know, that is still, I think, a sticking point that we need to work on.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Basically, you know, join the fun. There's a lot to do in this realm. But people yearn for strong families and resilient communities, a healthy environment, and a robust, sustainable, and locally determined marketplace. And with the tools of shareholder advocacy, people can be a part of the solution, not just the collateral damage of progress as these companies, you know, go about their activities. A noted governance writer, James McRitchie, once said that without shareholder advocates, we would still have poison pills, classified boards, and plurality voting for directors at almost every S&P 500, and so advocates are to be congratulated. He said that shareholder advocates are selfless statesmen, bringing democracy to companies that have enormous influence, because as has been said, companies determine far more than any other institution the quality of the air we breathe, the quality of the water we drink, and even, you know, where we live. So there is hope. We can have an effect, and together we can make positive change happen.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Bruce.
It's terrific. Thank you, Diane.
You are just listening to Bruce Herbert, Chief Executive of Newground Social Investment. For more information, check on the web at newground.net and investorvoice.net. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.